Hi there. This is Sweet Life, the show that helps you find your path and to walk it. I'm Brooke Peterson. Thanks for tuning in on Lancer Radio, streaming live from the campus of Pasadena College at lancerradio.org. Are you or might you become a non-traditional college student, meaning someone who has gone back to school after having lived a little, meaning you're not 18, fresh as a daisy with nothing but time. The economy has pushed millions of people out of jobs over the past 5 years, many of whom have taken the opportunity to go back to school, maybe looking to improve skills or start over with something different. But even before the economy went bust, people would often change careers, transition into new industries, or start fresh. I was told years ago that people change careers 7 times in their lifetime. That seems crazy to me. I've been trying to change careers for 3 years now, and it's exhausting. And not to get too personal, but it's not for sissies. My first guest really knows what it's like to change careers in midlife. Dr. Michael Edmondson started his professional life as a history teacher, having earned his doctorate and his master's in the field of history. After teaching in the public and private sector school system for years, he left to work in the business sector in marketing, product development, and sales. Now he is the co-founder and president of the MIPA Center for Personal Growth and Professional Development. He knows about change. Thank you for joining us, Michael Edmondson.
Hi, Brooke. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
No problem. So, to go back a little bit, what made you want to leave teaching to begin with? Were you seeking a change?
It's a great question. And I had taught at every level, middle school, actually elementary school, middle school, high school, and college for 9 years as I was pursuing my PhD in history. And towards the end of the degree, the classroom just kept getting smaller and smaller each year. And I have a challenged personality, and I think it's important for people to understand themselves a great deal and always sort of increase their self-awareness. And so as I was wrapping up the PhD program, my best friend actually got a job, who also has a PhD in history, actually. Peter and I are still friends some 20-plus years later. He had a job conducting market research for pharmaceutical brands around the nation, and he invited me to conduct an interview with the company, and I did, and I loved what the job offered. I loved what it did. I thought it was a great transferable set of skills. So I made the jump. And
was it difficult to make that decision?
And went into market research.
How difficult was it to make that decision to leave what you'd been doing for so long?
Well, the decision itself wasn't that difficult because I was bored, so I had to do something different. And I did not want to be one of those people that just stayed in a job just because I had a job. That, to me, was never really a life worth living. And so once I made the decision, then the next challenge was to figure out which industry I wanted to go into. And I liked healthcare. You know, it's not a bad industry to get into, helping people. And then the next question really was, what skill set can I use? And, you know, market research, and I wish someone had told me this, you know, when I was an undergraduate. That's sort of why we Peter and I have launched MIPA. But an historian is someone that tells stories. I mean, it's obvious, but they take all these different pieces of the puzzle, they put it together, and in a compelling, concise way, communicate that to others. And that's exactly what market research is. I mean, the techniques are different, the industries are different, the knowledge is different, but at the end of the day, anyone that's trained as a history major can go into market research and actually be quite successful at it.
Interesting. And now, was it hard to convince other people of that?
No, here's where a little luck played in, because the company that I worked with really only hired PhDs in the social sciences because they got it. See, they knew that a PhD in economics, a PhD in sociology, a PhD in psych, a PhD in poli-sci, and a PhD in history, where they were basically the people that I worked with, they all had a substantial skill set that all they had to do was transfer that those skills over to another industry. So in that respect, it really wasn't that difficult because they were open to accepting me as a PhD in history into the corporate life, even though I had no corporate experience. So, I mean, I still had it was a vigorous interview process. I had to listen to a focus group. I had to analyze the results. I had to design a presentation. I had to make the presentation. I had to answer questions.
Like an
audition. There was a test that they gave everybody. And I just love presenting, and I love answering questions. So, and I was also, I also had 9 years of experience presenting in front of people because I was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it comes down to transferring of skills. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people understand the skills that they have, because then they could actually transfer to many different industries and positions if they really understood what they had.
Right, right. Now, so it sounds like we have two different skill sets that we're talking about here. The, the history, and then B, the teaching with the public.
That's correct. No, absolutely. What I didn't realize, of course, I didn't know this until you started. I started the job, and I started traveling around the country interviewing physicians. And I'm like, oh, well, basically, I'm teaching the physician about this product that is being, that we're interviewing them about. They're teaching me how they it's what's called a treatment algorithm. Every physician has a treatment algorithm in their mind. So when a patient comes in exhibiting certain symptoms, they in their minds, they start to go down this treatment algorithm and try to figure out what the patient has.
Mm.
So that, to me, it's just fascinating. So if you have a sense of wonder,
mm-hmm.
You can engage anyone in a conversation. And if you keep in mind what you're trying to accomplish, and I was trying to find out certain things from the physician, you can actually do a pretty good job. So the skills actually, if you were to draw a Venn diagram, they actually overlapped during the actual market research process itself, because I was engaged in the conversation. And so I was abstract and extracting information. Then I had to put everything together in a report to give it to my clients. So I was being a historian slash teacher, you know, on a weekly basis.
Right.
I just never knew that that was even possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting because, you know, myself, listening to your story, I would never have necessarily thought history teacher, market developer, you know.
Right, exactly. Right.
So it's interesting to see how those things do connect in some way. Now, how was it, how different was it, and was it a bit of an adjustment to leave the classroom and go into corporate?
Well, that's another great question. There was the adjustment because, mm-hmm. I part-time teach now, so this is no criticism of teachers, but I know the teaching schedule very well. I mean, you got to get in by 7:30, you're done at 3. I know you go home, you mark papers and all that stuff, but you do have your summers off. You kind of control your own schedule. In the corporate world, there are no semesters.
Right.
Every day, I mean, you're at work, and the work hours, you know, vary. Things pop up. You might have to go in late at night. You might have to stay during the weekend.
Mm.
You get 2 weeks off, and that's it. There's no, 10-week summer vacation. Yes, I know teachers work during the summer. They got part-time jobs and so forth. But at the end of the day, trust me, I've been on both sides of that, and I can tell you, the life of a teacher is a lot less hectic from a scheduling point of view than a life of someone in corporate America. It's tough. It really is.
Okay, like just the grind of it, the nonstop?
The grind, and that's why you've got to really like what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I realized is, if I don't like it, I'm actually going to go get another job.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's another conversation, but then I started switching jobs once I understood how to do that as well.
Which was a whole other skill set, it sounds like, for you?
I think so. I think it is, because you have to know how to market yourself. You have to really know your strengths. You have to pull from examples in your background. And you just have to have the confidence of applying for jobs that, you might not think you're eligible for.
Right.
But if you were to, what I do is I work with people and I help them understand that they're, you're eligible for a lot more than you think you are. Which is really unfortunate. That's not really taught anywhere in schools. That's why my friend Peter and I launched MEPA, in 05, really to help people understand the correlation between personal growth and professional development.
Okay.
And that's really what we stress in our workshops and our publications.
Okay. Before we get into MEPA, which I do want to talk about right after this, in your help with people, are you finding that as difficult or more difficult than perhaps before the economy getting so challenging for people to make a transition? Are companies willing to stretch and apply skill sets without having that direct experience?
I think that really just depends on the situation and the person. I really hate to make sort of these abstract conclusions.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
it's always been difficult to make the transition.
Mm-hmm, okay.
It's always difficult to find the new job, but there's just a myriad of factors that are involved. And I think what happens is that people have to be willing to, A, move, physically move, and sometimes they don't want to do that. So right there, you're limiting your job opportunities because of your physical location.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what has happened is the internet has opened up a wide range of opportunities for people to work at home, and that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some companies that only work virtually. There are still some companies that mandate that you get in your cubicle or office every day from 9 to 5, you know, Monday through Friday. They refuse to allow anyone to work from home. So I think it's just a matter of really talking to as many people as possible and knowing what you want. I mean, Paul Arden, he's since passed away, but he was a retired art director in London, creative director, and he wrote a series of books. And one of the books that he wrote is, it's called It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be.
Mm-hmm.
And in his opening line is, and it's a short book, I mean, it's like 70 pages, it's got pictures in it, it's real, you can read it in 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
but it's very thought-provoking. But anyway, the one question is, it's not how good that you are, it's how good do you want to be? And he just asked the reader the very first question on the first page is, well, how good do you want to be? And most people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have no idea how good they want to be.
Interesting.
And I think that most people aren't willing to really put the time in to figure out, A, who they are, and B, what they're willing to do to get there.
Right, right.
And it's just really, it saddens me. There's a lot of distractions out there, and people get caught up in those distractions instead of themselves.
And so this is what...
I'm not avoiding the answer to your question.
Yeah,
I just think it does come down to a variety of factors.
I'm sure that's
one
very,
being
very
the
true.
Person. What are you willing to do, you know, to get to where you want to be? And A, do you know where you want to be?
And that is what MIPA is helping people with?
That's what we help people with since 2005. We started out, you know, with companies because that was what we had been working with. And then the more we gave, you know, we give plenty of public speaking events all the time. And the more that we talked, the more different types of people came up to us. And so we've given talks to public executives at publicly traded companies. We've given talks in communities. We've given... our material is now used actually in Africa.
Mm.
We went to the Philippines to do work. We've been invited to colleges. I did a training session for an entire faculty at a local college outside of Philadelphia. So what we've done is we've helped people understand that, yes, okay, the economy is a mess and there are issues outside of your control. Okay, well, there have always been that.
Right.
And I think what we've often remind people is that, you know, during the Great Depression and the recession of the 70s, you know, plenty of companies were launched, successful companies. Now, it took years, as it does for most companies, to take off. But nevertheless, you can still launch a company in a recession or even a depression. You just have to be willing to put your time in. And so what we've helped people understand is, no matter what the situation, if you're willing to increase your self-awareness and understand that personal growth is directly related to your professional development, you can make things happen. But all too often, people blame others, they blame the situation, they're not willing to do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I took a job and it was an hour away from my house, for example, some days in like an hour and a half.
Right.
But it was what I wanted. So I said, okay, well, this is what I wanted. And then after like 3 years, I had enough of that. So you've got to, what are you willing to do to get to where you want to be?
Okay, well, let me switch gears just a little
sure.
bit. We don't have too much time left. But
okay.
talking about your job as a personal growth coach, developer, professional developer, did you have to, you know, get certain education to do that, to be that? Or is it just something that you've evolved with or involved personally, just through reading and research and living life and walking the walk?
Yeah, it was actually organic.
Mm-hmm.
Pete and I took a look at the marketplace and realized like what was missing. There's a lot, you know, in the, it's certainly not self-help, but people could position it as self-help. So in the self-help section, there's a lot of cheerleading books, you
mm-hmm.
know, rah-rah, you can do anything.
Sure.
Not that at all. Then there's other books out there that are sort of nonfiction and they help you understand like what's going on and the larger picture of things, but there really wasn't any entity,
mm-hmm.
author, organization that helped people implement practical strategies, you know, everyday people implement practical strategies for their own development. And, you know, I often use the analogy of, because you were doing your message about, you know, non-traditional college students, well, even, no matter when you graduate college, whether you're 22, 32, or 102, you know, you sort of fall off this cliff because you leave this catalyst of support on campus But then who's your support? There's no career development office to go to once you've graduated college. You know, there's no, like, structure there.
Right.
And so what MEPA is trying to provide this structure, and so much so that we've put up over 120 exercises up on our website. You know, people can, you know, really deep dive into themselves and figure out who they are so that they can, you know, get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Now, I saw on your website, one of the things that you mentioned about yourself in your development was getting comfortable with being uncomfortable,
yes,
which I think is
yes.
wonderful. And how big of a part has that played in your life?
It is the number one factor in my own development, as it is in most people's, if they would actually understand it. You know, at MEPA, we've developed this thing called PATH, the Personal Assessment of Traits and Habits. It's the 20 very common traits and habits found in successful people, and you can define success any way that you'd like. One of those traits and habits is the ability to be comfortable while uncomfortable. Most of life, Brooke, makes us uncomfortable socially and mm-hmm. personally and professionally. We're just uncomfortable, you know, because conversely, what do humans do? We seek comfort.
we seek comfort
in what we wear, who we talk to, where we go, what we eat, and so forth. But true growth only occurs outside of our comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at successful people, they're very comfortable being uncomfortable, and they dedicate themselves through discipline to work through that uncomfortableness to get to the other side. And that's when true growth occurs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's awkward.
It's very awkward. That's right.
Okay,
it's very awkward. Yeah. And you're like, ooh. So you should actually cherish that awkwardness and realize that it's an important part of your growth.
Okay, last question real quick.
Sure.
Any regrets changing?
Absolutely not. No, actually, I just wrote a Facebook post about this. I don't understand the word regret, because regret means that you're unhappy with who you are right now.
Uh-huh.
It's tied to your past. Absolutely not. I'd do everything all over again.
Perfect.
There are a lot more mistakes, too, than successes.
And get comfortable with those as well.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you for joining us, Michael Edmondson. If you would like to find out more about Michael's development and consulting services, go to www.meepa.com. That is MEAPA.com. We're going to take a very short break. Coming up, we'll be talking plate tectonics with our PCC's very own. You're listening to Sweet Life on LanserRadio.org. I'm Brooke Peterson.